to the Think Christianly podcast, where we help Christians understand what they believe, why they believe it, and why it matters. And now your host, author and speaker, Jonathan Morrow.
How do we live as Christians in a post-Christian world? How do we live out the Christian faith that's found in the pages of the New Testament when our culture largely does not accept them? They don't agree with us on morality or spirituality, and yet we're called to engage them. So what does that look like? How do we practically engage with this generation, this culture, in a world that does not accept the teachings of Christ? Well, that's what we're going to talk about in this podcast. But before we begin, this podcast is brought to you by Impact 360. And Impact 360 is a 9-month academic gap year experience for 18 to 20-year-olds with the mission of equipping the next generation to become Christ-centered servant leaders. You can find out more at impact360.net. And today we're going to look at a passage in Acts chapter 17 and watch Paul show us how to engage a world that does not accept the teachings of Christ.
We are responsible to carry this good news. We're called to be ambassadors. So what does that look like? That's what we're going to do today. But there's a barrier to that. There's a barrier to that that we need to understand, and we need to diffuse, and we need to move it aside, set it aside. And it's this. See, in our church today, across the country, there's a mindset that we need to reject. And I'll never forget, it was several years ago, I was reading a passage from a book. You know when you read something and it just strikes you, you're like, that, you just put your finger on it, that's it. It resonates, you had the experience. Well, this quote, I think, defines the American church today and is a big barrier for us being who God's called us to be. And we need to reject Sunday morning only Christianity. But here's how she put it. Our lives are often fractured and fragmented, with our faith firmly locked in the private realm of the church and family, where it rarely has a chance to inform our life and work in the public realm. The aura of worship, all of this, dissipates after Sunday, and we unconsciously absorb secular attitudes the rest of the week. But here's the big idea. We inhabit two separate worlds, navigating a sharp divide between our religious life in our ordinary life. That will completely take the legs out from under us as a church if we buy into this mindset. If Monday morning through Saturday night is ordinary life, and Sunday at church, and by the time you finish Sunday lunch and take off Sunday's best, you're done with Christianity for the week, there is no way to be who God's called us to be. Because a church of Sunday morning only Christians will not have the influence that God has called us to have and that our world desperately needs us to have. We have to move beyond, we have to reject Sunday morning only Christianity. We have to do that. See, God is calling us to more. And so we need to answer the bell. We need to say, okay, what part are we playing? It's a holistic life. It's every day of the week, 24 hours a day. We're on mission. Now, Paul had some words for this. He's one of our clearest teachers on this, and we get a rare gift this morning. But here's this passage. Therefore, we are ambassadors for Christ. Now, what does an ambassador do? Who do they represent? Do they represent themselves? No. They represent the one who sends them. Therefore, we are ambassadors for Christ, as though God were making an appeal through us. We beg you, on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God. That's Paul's theology. That's the principle. We also see it expressed in Colossians. Be wise in the way you act towards outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. He assumes you're going to have opportunities. All right? Let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. Have you ever had a meal that just had way too much salt in it? All right, you can't even, you're just water, quick. And then have you ever had a meal that has no salt whatsoever in it? And you're just like, that's just bland. That's just, you know, we need to have the right amount of salt for each situation we find ourselves in. That's what God's calling us to. But those are the principles, and that seems very academic. But what's really cool about this is actually in our New Testament, we get the point, we get the opportunity to see Paul's principles on display when he interacts in a culture where people don't believe like him, that's pluralistic, that's biblically illiterate, and everything else. Does that sound a little familiar about the kind of culture we live in? We get to see these principles on display in his life because we are called to be everyday ambassadors, okay? Everybody gets to play in this church. There's no paid professionals that do the ministry and then everybody else who cheers them on. We're all in the game. According to the New Testament, if you are a follower of Christ, you're an everyday ambassador. We're all in, all of us, okay? That's our calling. That's the high calling God has given us. So we get to see Paul as an everyday ambassador in action, which is a really, really awesome opportunity. So let me just preview the rest of the morning. We're going to walk through this passage in Acts chapter 17, and we're just going to make observations about Paul's context. And then we're going to circle back around, and we're going to kind of crystallize that and summarize that for what does that mean for us to be an everyday ambassador today? And then we're going to talk about some next steps. So that's where we're going. All right? So here's Paul. And he shows up at the Areopagus. Now, Acts chapter 17, verse 16 says this. While Paul was waiting for them in Athens, his spirit was troubled within him when he saw that the city was full of idols. Now, the Jewish leadership had been stirring up some trouble for Paul, so he was kind of moving forward. All right, and so he was waiting on Silas and Timothy to come meet up with him in Athens. But rather than just kind of sit in the hotel and get room service, he figured he'd go out, kind of mix it up a little bit, engage. This is an opportunity, right? Ambassadors look for opportunities to speak the message. So he's in there, and he sees a city full of idols. And there's two parts of this response. The first thing is he was jealous for the glory of Jesus Christ. Think about it this way. Parents, if you had a son or a daughter, World Cup championship, they score the winning goal, and the media reports the wrong name. How do you feel about that? Are you jealous for the glory of your child? How much more so should we be jealous for the glory of God in Christ, reconciling the world for himself, when people are worshiping idols? The worship that is due him is being put towards idols. He's jealous for the glory of Christ. But he also was moved by compassion for people who were deceived, because they're deceived by idols. It's a both and. We're jealous for the glory of Christ, and he had compassion on those who were being deceived. Well, it goes on to verse 17. So he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and with those who worshiped God, and in the marketplace every day with those who happened to be there. Now, very important point about what's going on here. Paul is reasoning with both religious and non-religious people. Christianity, as we talked about last week, is the kind of faith that you can reason about. Why? Because we reason about things that are real. We don't reason about the Easter Bunny or the leprechauns or anything else. We reason about things that are real, and he's not just appealing to blind faith or emotional appeals or felt needs. Many times the gospel is proclaim today, it'll fix your life. Now, the gospel will fix your life, but that's not the reason you start with. The reason you start with is that it's true. And it does happen to work. And it does conform your life. But Paul was starting by reasoning with them about things, whether it's in synagogue, or he's with God-fearing Gentiles, or he's in the marketplace. Hey, you walking by, hey, let me talk to you about. I mean, Paul was just kind of whatever opportunities came his way. And he viewed every day as an opportunity to engage others with the good news. And that's instructive to us. That's a helpful example. That's his mindset. Okay? And then we continue. Then also, some of the Epicurean and Stoic philosophers argued with him. Some said, "What is this pseudo-intellectual trying to say?" Others replied, "He seems to be a preacher of foreign deities because he was telling the good news about Jesus and the resurrection." There's so much in this passage, but I'm going to just highlight a couple things. First, that word pseudo-intellectual, in your translation, might be babbler or even seed picker. All right? That's not a compliment. In case you're wondering, Athens was the Harvard, the Oxford of the day. It was the elite city. All the ideas that we're going to look at, they happened there. The two dominant schools of thought of the day were the Epicureans and the Stoics. Now, a seed picker is this idea is like, what is this guy with all these little scraps of sayings from somebody else? He doesn't even know what he's talking about. Yet Paul is ready to engage, but we'll talk about that in a second. But he gets accused of something, a preacher of foreign deities. Now, reach back in your history class. Does anybody remember another ancient Greek who was accused of preaching foreign or strange deities in ancient Greece? You might remember. Starts with letter S. Socrates. This is actually almost a direct quote from Xenophon. Socrates is guilty of crime in refusing to recognize the gods acknowledged by the state and importing strange divinities, strange deities of his own. All right? So the exact same charge, by the way, that Socrates led to his death, where he had to drink the poison, Paul is now in Athens, finding himself accused of the very same thing. So they bring him forward. We'll get to that. Here's the bottom line, though. Paul was challenged and insulted by the leading intellectuals of his day, but he had the intellectual chops to be able to engage them, as we'll see, which is very important for an ambassador. And he was neither intimidated by the power centers of the world or awestruck or impressed. It's like, ooh, Harvard, Oxford. No, there's nothing wrong with those places, but those are kind of the elite kind of status people. That's where people know stuff, right? So he's able to engage in that. He's not scared of that. As ambassadors who are committed to truth, we shouldn't be either. All right, he goes on. They took him and brought him. That's a nice way of saying, you're coming with us, Paul, and we're bringing you to the Areopagus, which is Mars Hill, which is the place of the council. This is where all the business was done to kind of weigh things. This was not just, hey, you want to come speak for us? This was, what are you proclaiming in our city? All right? So Paul's there. May we learn about this new teaching you're speaking of? For what you say sounds strange to us, and we want to know what these ideas mean. Now, all the Athenians and the foreigners residing there spent their time on nothing else but telling or hearing something new. I'm so glad in our culture we don't waste time just looking for the new thing. What's the new idea? The new weight loss program, the new spirituality, the new whatever. It's well, if it's new, it must be true. That's kind of the mindset that people have. They were doing it then, we do it today, right? So tell us this new teaching, Paul. All right, but his everyday, now notice this, there he was in the marketplace, he was in the synagogue, and that little everyday opportunity, God used to open up a bigger opportunity, for influence. And that's the way that God works. You just kind of go about being an everyday ambassador, and you let God worry about the opportunities you find yourself with. Because he's going to give them to you, if you're looking. And sometimes even when you're not. They brought him on it, you know, so that's what we see happening in Paul's little trip here. But now he starts his speech, and then Paul stood, and you just have to imagine this. He was given the platform of basically the biggest pulpit in the ancient world. I mean, he was able to speak at the Areopagus in Athens. It's amazing. So what did he say? Then Paul stood in the middle of the Areopagus and said, "Men of Athens, I see that you are extremely religious in every respect. For as I was passing through and observing the objects of your worship, I even found an altar on which was inscribed to an unknown God. Therefore, what you worship in ignorance, this I proclaim to you." Now, how does Paul feel about idolatry? Does he have a high opinion or a low opinion? Low. Read Romans 1. Okay? What's interesting, contrast that, Romans 1 was written to believers. He's communicating with unbelievers here. He tries to find a way to compliment them as common ground to start from. He's going to get to the idolater, but you don't lead with that. Because he has a principle in mind. He's saying, look, you know what, you're very religious. You at least take this stuff seriously, I commend it. And then he goes on to say, look, you've got all these gods you worship, and you have sacrifices too, and in case you think you missed one, you have an unknown God that you sacrifice to. It's kind of a catch-all. But that unknown God is the one I'm going to use as my open door to get into you. I'm going to proclaim to you what you worship in ignorance. That's going to be my entry point. Ambassadors are always looking for good entry points, by the way. And he's a student of what this culture worships. That observing the objects of your worship actually is a strong sense of investigation. We need to be students of our culture to know what they worship. And we'll talk about that as we apply it to everyday ambassadors at the end. All right, he goes on. Let's look at his speech. The God who made the world and everything in it. He is the Lord of heaven and earth and does not live in shrines made by hands. Neither is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives everyone life and breath and all things. See, unlike the fickle gods of the Greeks, which changed with the blowing of the wind, Paul proclaims to them the God who is the creator and sustainer of all life. And you can just see Paul with the Parthenon right over there, which is the representation of all the Greek deities and everything else. He's probably pointing at it, saying, what you worship here, God made that. You've got these little tribal deities and things like that. No, I've got a much bigger God in mind. See, our God doesn't need anything. You see, the Greek gods were very fickle and they wanted sacrifices and they're almost big humans, basically, you know, these big powerful humans they have bad character and they have bad habits and they're just writ large. There's very big expressions of that. But you say, no, our God is the creator and sustainer of all. And then he goes on to say this, from one man he has made every nationality to live over the whole earth and has determined their appointed times and the boundaries of where they live. He did this so they might seek God and perhaps they might reach out to him and find him, though he's not far from each one of us. Now, and this is, if you're a student of the Bible, if you want to start with a passage, it'd be fun to investigate all the background. This is your passage. Everything he's doing right here is he is in their wheelhouse. He's using their language, using their poets. He's using all that. He's not citing Old Testament. Now, back in Acts chapter 13, when he's got a predominantly Jewish audience, you know what he's doing? He's like, he's the Messiah. Here he is. He's connecting the biblical dots. His audience has changed. So he's got to get in that a little bit differently. So he's saying, well, look, from one man, he has made every nation. Well, God is the ruler of nations. And people seek, you know, he wants them to seek him. But remember the epics, the Epicureans and the Stoics at the beginning? One of the beliefs of the Epicureans was, or the Stoics rather, is that kind of God pervades everything. Kind of a pantheism of sort, where all is God. And Paul's going, no, he created, so he's distinct from, but he's near. So what you want about God being present with us in reality, we have, but we also have a transcendent personal God, not just an immanent relational God. All right? So then he goes on. He gets common ground with them because the Stoics also had a high value for the universal brotherhood of man. He's like, you know that thing that's in your worldview over here? We can explain that over here better because all were descended from one man who God created. This is not a tribal deity. You had lots of little deities, and so Paul knows that, and he's working his way through it, all right? For in him we live and move and exist, as even some of your own poets have said, for we also are his offspring. Being God's offspring, then, we shouldn't think that the divine nature is like gold or silver or stone, an image fashioned by human heart and imagination. See, Paul is quoting Epimenides to them, their 6th century poet. Being God's offspring, he's getting common ground. Again, that's where he's tracking how he's doing. And then he makes the argument, look, if we're living beings and we're God's offspring, how much more so is God a living being as well? So he's just doing the work of going through their worldview and kind of co-opting it, bringing it back to the Christian worldview. All right. Therefore, having overlooked the times of ignorance, God now commands all people everywhere to repent because he has set a day when he is going to judge the world in righteousness by the man he has appointed. He has provided proof of this to everyone by raising him from the dead. So look at what we have here. Everyone is now accountable. That's his message. Judgment is coming. And he's had to get categories, and we're going to talk about this. But there's a rush in our culture to get to Jesus right away. The problem with that is that if we get to Jesus and everybody's categories are wrong, they're not going to hear the real Jesus. So as one of my professors talked about, Dr. Doug Grotius, he said it this way: we need to get to Jesus as quick as we can, but not any sooner. All right? And Paul is doing that. You'll notice in his speech, he hasn't gotten to Jesus yet. He's talked about there is a creator God. There's a commonality about humanity and everything else. He's building his case of categories before he gets to Jesus, and here he comes. Now he commands everyone everywhere to repent because he has set a day when he is going to judge the world in righteousness by the man he's appointed. Now what's interesting is, again, he provides proof. What's the proof of the Christian faith? We talked about it last week. That's testable. It's the resurrection. It's at the heart of Paul's message from the very beginning. So he brings that in. The problem is, that was the showstopper. He gets cut off at the resurrection. When they heard about resurrection from the dead, some began to ridicule him. But others said, we'd like to hear from you again about this. And then Paul left their presence. However, some men joined him and believed, including Dionysius the Areopagite and a woman named Damaris and others with him. Interesting about this. Basically, people heard the speech and then they followed Paul and then they believed. Paul was an ambassador. He guided the way. He said, come with me. The idea is that I'm going to have to explain this further. I've got you down the path a little ways. We need to keep talking about this. And other people believed. He had two responses: ridicule and repentance, following. That's very instructive for us as ambassadors. We're going to come back to that. Now, Paul was faithful in that context, in an opportunity he was presented in, to proclaim the message because he's an ambassador. And whose message do we proclaim? God's. He just translated it for his audience. We live in a very religious, spiritual but not religious, and pluralistic culture. Many options, lots of philosophies. We like spiritual stuff, but we don't really like the truth part. That's our background. So we have to communicate accordingly. All right, so let's talk about this. What does that mean for us? That was kind of a quick pass through the text of Acts 17 to watch Paul's principles on display. We're everyday ambassadors. Here's how Paul did that in a context where people didn't share his assumptions. Most people don't share our assumptions, even in the religious South. The words don't mean the same things to everybody, so we can't assume anything in our conversations. So here's some things that are true of everyday ambassadors that we learn from this passage. First, we have compassion for those who are deceived and far from God. We have to stand here. Start here. What's our response to a world full of people, in a city full of people, in a county full of people who are far from God? It can't be, whew, well, good for me. That can't be it. See, we have to resist. It's not an us versus them mentality. And this is common in churches today where it's like, well, you know what? If somebody believes differently from me, they're the enemy. No. We were all deceived. We have found the truth, and it's our job to help others find the truth. It's an us thing. It's not an us versus them thing. And an everyday ambassador has that mindset where we don't see it as an us versus them. All right? The next thing that we see is this. We're jealous for the glory of Jesus Christ as well, just like Paul was. We need to take seriously our love for God and the honor that's due his name. That ought to, as we grow closer to God, it ought to bother us that people aren't worshiping the creator. They're worshiping the creature or the created object or the possibility of something, fame or money or success or whatever it might be, instead of Jesus Christ. We need to be jealous for that. All right. Next, we see that we need to understand what everyday ambassadors understand, what they believe, why they believe it, and why it matters. Now, let's sit here for a minute on this, because this is really important. A lot of Christians, and we have this, we grow up in the church, some of us, and we've got bits and pieces. We've got Noah, we've got an ark, we've got a coat of many colors. What else? What else do we remember? What do you remember from Sunday school? Moses. And the right answer in church is always Jesus. So we got to throw Jesus in there, right? And then there's some other things. There's these fragments. And we don't know our own story. See, when you saw Paul, what was he able to do? He knew his own story so well. He knew the kingdom story so well and had confidence in it that he could go into an environment and he could translate. He could go, okay, here's my story. Where are the connecting points, which we'll get to? Here's their story. But before we even get to the connecting points, I think a lot of the times we don't share because we don't know our story. I mean, we are not going to have confidence to share something we don't know or that we have reasons to believe are true. That you could go into the marketplace of ideas. You could go on campus and just start interacting with a survey about spiritual things and be just fine. And if they had a PhD in world religions, all the better. Because Christianity competes in the marketplace of ideas. And I know that, and you know that. And then we go confidently, dependent upon the Spirit and upon His grace, but we can move into those situations with confidence because we know our story. So do we know our story? That might be a good application. Do you understand theology? Who God is like? What God is like? He's the creator, the sustainer. He's going to ultimately judge. He's revealed Himself certain ways, the Bible and human nature and everything else in between. Do you have reasons for what you believe? Things like that. We have to start there. We have to think more than ever today in terms of kind of a worldview evangelism. Because what happens, we can't communicate something we don't know. But then furthermore, we get here where we've got this. We need to discover and create connecting points between kingdom and culture. Because that's what Paul did so beautifully in that passage. He knew his own story. And he knew their story. And he was able to start connecting dots. And he'd say, ah, you highlight these features right here. That's my entry point. I'm going to connect those two things. We're going to have a conversation about it. And I'm going to help your story that you think, because there's some things in there that are at least pointing in the right direction. I'm just going to bring that over here to my story, which I know really well, which is the true story of the world, Christianity. And I'm going to build bridges to connect between the two. But the problem we have there is we don't know what their stories are. We just live in a world of entertainment and satisfaction of our own desires, so we don't know our story. And then we don't take the time to really learn their story. And then we throw out words like Jesus and hope that it does something. And we can't do that as everyday ambassadors. That's not what we're called to do. That's not the example we see. God has called us to more. But our world desperately needs us to connect the dots. Make sense of that. All right? Here's an incredible observation. This is really important. The ultimate goal is to preach the gospel, but the gospel is not simple to those whose background prevents them from understanding it. See, Paul could have led in there and said, you know what? Just believe in the resurrection of the dead. And they would have been like, why? It'd be like this. If you've read, let's just pick an example. Let's just say if there's the Harry Potter series. If you started with book 7, are you going to understand what's going on? You're like, you don't even understand the plot line or why it matters. So the punchline is going to be lost on you. And that's why Jesus is good news. They're like, good news for what? So we have to start back at the beginning. There is a God who exists. We can have knowledge about this God. He's revealed Himself in history. It's testable. We can investigate it. Look, that's what we did last week. So you can go there, but you've got to begin to take down some of these barriers for people because they can't even get to the gospel. It's not simple to them because their background assumptions keep them from really seriously entertaining it and really understanding it. Now, obviously, we're always trusting that the Spirit of God is at work. But we need to do our part as everyday ambassadors to make sure the message is clear and persuasive and compelling, like Paul gave us. So we need to be about that. All right, next, everyday ambassadors are respectful of those who believe differently. This is a biggie. Please don't make fun of other people's religions. You wouldn't want them to make fun of yours. And if Christianity is true, then they're deceived. We shouldn't mock or make light of things or mock them or get frustrated with them like and put them down. We need to be respectful of those with whom we disagree and who believe differently. That's Paul. That's Peter, with gentleness and respect, always be ready That's part of what we do. Now, the reason oftentimes that we're not, and I'm just going to highlight a part of this quote, is that generations of us have been raised in which we're kind of told to shore up our religious commitment by willpower, kind of like holding your breath. Okay, hold your breath for 10 minutes, go. You can't do it. So if as Christians we don't understand what we believe, why we believe it, and why it matters, yet that's our social community where we feel relationally safe, and somebody threatens that with another idea, but I don't know what to say to that, what can be our natural response? Defensiveness. Who are you? And we attack. Because we're the problem. Because we're getting defensive about that. And so we can't move into that with love and grace and patience. We don't have to have all the answers, but we need to know enough about our own story to confidently move in. And yeah, you can raise anything you want. That's a great question. Let's go there. And I'm going to be respectful. But you can't do that if you don't have knowledge of your own worldview, because you'll begin to get defensive and insecure about that, and you won't even have those conversations. So that's the way we have to, that's why these are all moving together, all right? So also, everyday ambassadors courageously take advantage of the situations that God places them in. God puts us in situations every day to engage others. Are we noticing? Are we listening? Are we observant? Do we have time? And that's hard for me. I mean, well, I'm on my way to do this. I can't talk to you about that, right? But we need to be mindful. Everyday ambassadors are always looking for opportunities to plant a seed, put a stone in their shoe, ask a thoughtful question. See, as the body of Christ, we don't have to get from A to Z in a two-minute conversation. Sometimes it happens that way. Sometimes you get all the way to a gospel presentation and somebody's able to respond to that. But many times it's just, you know, that's something to think about. Thanks for taking the time. Or I had a question. Thanks for answering that. And that's what an everyday ambassador does. They do those kind of things. They courageously, and it takes courage, right? You've got, Paul did that. He's like, okay, biggest stage in the world. Here we go. We step on in. And you know what? God met him there, and he'll meet us there. We trust him. You just got to step out. All right? Next, we've got this. This is so crucial. Have the good news about Jesus and the resurrection at the center of your message. Notice Paul got there. He got shut down because of it, but there was no doubt where he was going and where the point of tension needs to exist in our message. And it's here. It's at the resurrection. Now, there's a couple of reasons why this matters. Like we saw last week, it keeps Jesus, which every other worldview and every other religion wants, at the center. We bring him right back to the center, all right? It's not mere belief in some vague God, some spirituality kind of thing. No, it's Jesus Christ. That's what we're trying to get. Second, the resurrection is testable. It's publicly available. It's a historical event. Again, people can investigate this. You're going to find a lot of openness to that idea. And thirdly, and this is crucial, if we wanted to know what our number one probably cultural assumption is that we're dealing with in our day today, is this. People assume that supernatural doesn't happen. So we need to preach a supernatural gospel and bring a point of tension. Because the resurrection sharply challenges the belief that all that exists is physics and chemistry and biology and genetics. All of reality is describable in those terms. That's what naturalism teaches. Well, you can't have miracles, you can't have God, angels, human beings with souls, or anything else if naturalism is true. That's the dominant assumption of our day. So the resurrection gets us to that point. And then they may ask you, well, how do miracles happen? Well, if it's at least reasonable to believe that God exists, then miracles become possible. Then you want to investigate a miracle on a case-by-case basis. And since as a Christian, I've done a little bit of homework on the centerpiece of my faith, I can say something about the historical evidence for the resurrection. Because people need you to build that bridge for them today. It's not enough just to say, well, Jesus died on the cross and rose again. Sometimes, in the grace of God and the Spirit works in that way, wonderful. But most of the time, it's not even going to register. It's not going to get there the way it needs to. We need to challenge that with preaching a supernatural gospel. And finally this, faithfully represent God and his message, and then leave the results to him. Your responsibility is not their response. Your responsibility is to be a faithful ambassador of the message. Do I know it? Is it clear? Am I taking courage? Am I helping them connect the dots? Am I being respectful? You know what? And if they laugh, if they ridicule me, well, they did Paul and they did Jesus. That's okay. If they accept and follow, praise God, the glory goes to Christ, we keep moving on. But either way, we've got to preach the good news about Jesus and the resurrection today and then faithfully leave the results to God. That's what everyday ambassadors do. All right, so what are some next steps, practically speaking? We've looked at our barrier, which is this idea of everyday, kind of Sunday morning only Christianity. We've looked at the fact that Paul is a great example and calls us through God's word to be everyday ambassadors. We've seen an everyday ambassador on display in Acts chapter 17 in Mars Hill in a context that's very similar to ours, culturally speaking. We've kind of summarized what that is for us, kind of how we get there and what that looks like in our life. So what are the next steps? We all have next steps. You never come to a point in the Christian life where we don't have next steps. I've got next steps. You've got them. So we can all admit that and we'll come up with some next steps. That's great. Now, here's one option. Initiate that phone call, that conversation you've been waiting to have with that person, and you know who they are. That play date, that relative, the coworker. You've been thinking for a while now, you know what? I need to have a conversation with, or I need to try to at least get a spiritual direction here. Well, at the bottom, we'll talk about this in a minute. Put a date down there at the bottom and have the courage to initiate something in your context, your sphere of influence, being an everyday ambassador right where you are. There's nothing like on-the-job training to learn how to be an everyday ambassador. Get yourselves in some conversations. All right, that's a big one. Another one's this: grow in your cultural and conversational confidence by studying and learning. There's no substitute for learning in the Christian life. So I'm going to give you some, we're going to walk through a couple of options for books. Okay, we're approaching summer, and summer's a great time for reading. So I'm going to give you six. You don't have to read all six. I'm going to describe each one. Pick one. You can read one book in 2 months. You can do it. And it'll help you have more confidence as you engage those conversations. So which book do you need to read? I don't know. Well, let's all describe these. The Unexpected Adventure by Lee Strobel and Mark Middleberg is a great, basically about 40 different accounts that are about 3 pages each of conversations they had with people telling them about Jesus. Some things went well, some things went poorly, and they share both and ways to learn from them. So it's just an encouragement, just everyday situations they found themselves in where they shared the gospel. So what could that look like in your life? That's a great place to start. 3 or 4 page chunks, we can do that. Counterfeit Gods by Timothy Keller. If you want to know what our cultural idols are, there's your book. If you want to find those connecting points to connect the gospel to about significance and purpose and all those things that people really worship and then the God who we're supposed to worship, that's a great one, not only for you personally, but also to help connect the dots because people are worshiping those idols in our culture. So that's a great option. Tactics by Greg Kochel. If you've ever found yourself flat-footed in a conversation, stumped, didn't know where to go next, and want to learn how to ask good questions, that is your book. It's one of the best books I've ever read, and it's easily in my top 10. All right? There's a book, Think Christianly. I wrote that one, okay, for the purpose of helping you understand culture and how the Christian worldview speaks into every area of life. So if you want to understand a little bit more about culture and the connections there, that might be an option for you. Bringing the gospel home. Now, how many of you guys have people in your family who don't know Jesus Christ? Would you raise your hand? How hard are those conversations? There's just something different about a family member and sharing Christ with them. Well, Randy Newman does a great job of talking about his own story about things that went well and went poorly and gives you some great. So if you've got a family member and that's your next step, read that one. And then finally, Hollywood Worldviews by Brian Godawa. He's a filmmaker. He does a great job. I mean, movies are the medium of our day. They shape culture. Images and ideas, they drive things. And so that's a great book to understand more about film. And you can talk about how to build bridges between movies and film and different things you see. So maybe that's an option. So you got space at the bottom, maybe in our so what time, fill it in. But let me just close again with this passage. Our world needs good news. You have it. I have it. We're called by God to be an everyday ambassador wherever we find ourselves. By God's grace, let us be good ambassadors who go into our world and love people well, can clearly communicate the message of Jesus and the resurrection, and we leave the results to God, and He gets all the glory.
Think Christianly, because all of life is connected.